You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If you want interesting and entertaining debate on the Premier League and other English leagues, but from a show that doesn't take itself too seriously, then check out The Whistleblowers. It's a weekly football podcast hosted by me. I used to play football, Martin Gritton, stand-up Mark Smith when he can, and music manager Gareth Dobson, who always has plenty of good chat, being a Spurs fan. We basically get football writers in to have a chat as well, and we talk about the stories that matter in English football, whether it's on the pitch or off it. It's free to listen to iTunes, Acast, Spotify, and wherever else you get your podcasts. Or you can download the Whistleblowers app. Follow us on Twitter at Football Podcast. Cheers.
Welcome, ladies and gents, to the Manchester United Redcast. Back once again this week after another typical United week, full of highs and then proper lows as well. No, we didn't, you know, we didn't take that much of a beating, but we still got beat by Arsenal. My name's Aaron Paul, guiding you through another interesting United discussion. Joining me this week, Chris Curley. You're up, pal.
Hello, everybody out there who are feeling quite sad about United this week.
And also Andrew Mann-Paul, the pioneer of broken biscuits. All right, mate.
Oh, mate, I tell you what, talk of broken biscuits. It's a broken club, isn't it?
Yeah, man.
That is a broken biscuit, a club.
Yeah.
If Man United were a biscuit, what biscuit would they be?
A shit club.
Rich tea. Just shit.
Ooh,
that's shit. Crap.
I like rich tea, Aaron. It's a good dunking biscuit.
Rich teas are the scum of biscuits, mate.
Oh, they're good dunkers. They're good dunkers.
They just stick to the roof of your mouth.
They don't even taste of anything.
No. You're eating wrong.
Mate, come on.
Even the pigeons refuse them, rich tea.
Well, you would know, wouldn't you? you know, yeah. I don't know. I like a chocolate digestive, a proper chocolate, like a McVitie's chocolate digestive. You can't be that.
But you like a chocolate hobnob as well.
I can take it or leave it. I can take it or leave it.
United are playing like a pink wafer.
You're on all the sugar icing. It's because you come from biscuit background, Chris. That's what.
Yeah, I do have a biscuit heritage.
I think we're playing like a party ring, you know, on those proper party rings. When you know they look good in it, just like on paper, they actually look really good, but in reality, they're just shit. They're really,
what
really
are we talking
shit.
About biscuits or United,
both.
All right.
Here's the thing on Sunday, though. Right, the teams got announced an hour before, and I was talking to my mate Darren, and we were like, you know what, that's a good side. That's a good side. I quite like that side. Surprised Tuanzebe didn't start to handle Aubameyang's pace, but I thought, you know what, good side. And then the game started, and it was horrendous. It was so depressing.
They were like two paces behind Arsenal, weren't they?
I don't get it now. I really don't. I was trying to think about it. Can I think of a theory about why that happened? And why are we playing well in the Champions League but not in the Premier League, particularly at home? Now, that started in the last three home games when we were rubbish. It's more than the fans and not being there. It's got to be more than that. It is about the character, I think, of these players, the mentality of them. Now, I can understand them playing well in the Champions League because they earned the right to play in the Champions League, so they're up for it. And my only theory I can possibly cling on to as something new is that when it comes to the Premier League, maybe they're disappointed with the summer recruitment and thought, hold on a minute, we finished third, we worked hard, and the club isn't backing us. And if they just drop, if each player just drops off 1-2%, well, that's the team's playing 20% less good, and they're going to get beat. So I don't know. And now I think a week ago we're all, well, Ollie's fine, Ollie's good, he's done well, and now everyone's looking like Pochettino's going to walk through the door at 3 o'clock on Saturday after Goodison's finished, the game at Goodison's done. Yeah. It's just hard to fathom.
I don't think they're going to sack Ollie for the simple fact that he's a yes man. And they're quite happy with that, the Glazers and Woodprick.
Really?
Woodprick. They don't care. They don't care about... Look at what they did. What was the American football team that they looked after? And they, you know, they were a winning team. Was it? No, it wasn't Florida, was
Tampa,
it?
Tampa Bay, who they own, right?
Yeah.
It's a good point about Tampa Bay, because when they won the Super Bowl with the Glazers in 2003, they let Tampa kind of just disappear from being the top notch, right?
Yeah.
And didn't really invest in them. This past year, though, they've signed Tom Brady and Gronkowski, right? Who are arguably two of the... Well, Brady is the all-time greatest quarterback, possibly. Gronkowski is one of the best players they've ever had from the days back at New England Patriots. And they're playing together at Tampa, and they're winning, and they've got their best record, I think, for about 20 years. So that, and they wouldn't have been cheap. Tom Brady and Gronkowski, he came out of retirement, wouldn't have been cheap. So they've invested in Tampa to have a better NFL season, which is interesting to me when it comes to what the caliber of player they're investing in into us. Well, obviously, Cavani, great. Great on paper. But he hasn't played for 9 months. He hasn't trained for ages.
It looks like it as well.
It's going to take him a month to get back any kind of match fitness, even if he is the right man at 33.
Did you see him warming up?
It was the team that played last year.
Did you see him warming up, Chris?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I'd do more warming up.
I bet you do more than that, getting out of bed.
Let's just call them... I wouldn't call them... You know, it wasn't warm-up. It was more physical jerks. That's, you know, that's how I'd describe them. They were physical jerks, you know, like the odd movement here and there. It was like an over-70s yoga class.
It was silly.
But the point is, that is still last season's team, which hasn't really progressed. And clearly, Van der Beek isn't someone that Ollie's trusting into the team structure yet. And arguably, probably said, well, yeah, he's great, but I think I need a centre-half. I think I need a striker first. I think I need a right-winger first. If you can get them, then fine. But instead, Van der Beek was the first one to come along. It's just so unbalanced. It's like they've built a team for somebody else.
Yeah.
Or trying to. And I do think Pogba wouldn't have been there this summer. He would have got sold this year, but for lockdown, right? So I understand some plans may have changed. But I can't... He did the brave thing, Ollie, dropping Pogba. But I don't see Paul Pogba play 3 good games consecutively.
No.
He's either 8 out of 10 or he's 2 out of 10. And he's a liability running backwards.
Yeah.
So I can't wait any longer for Pogba to suddenly do what Pogba should be doing. He ran around really well on Wednesday night against Leipzig because he didn't have to run backwards.
Yeah.
As soon as they
were winning, so his head didn't go down.
His head didn't go down, but he played well, I thought, attacking-wise, in that left-sided place against Leipzig. But against Arsenal, you know, if anyone ran off him, he's just lazy. He's a lazy defender. Every penalty he gives away is a lazy decision.
We can't seem to win in the league at home. I mean, I'm sort of very lost right now. I'm sitting here thinking, are they not playing for Ollie? I'm sitting here thinking, is it just a blip? What the fuck is it, boys?
Well, I'd like to just tune up here and start with one of my theories. Is obviously, I mean, I'm getting to a stage where I'm repeating myself all the time, and I don't think that anything will be resumed until Woodward and his cronies have gone. I really don't.
No, definitely.
Because they're quite happy plodding along with Ollie, one win, one here, one there, look good one week. And, you know, as for Ollie to turn up, and his first part of the interview was, oh, we weren't at the races.
I think he felt on that interview post-match, was struggling for an answer, going, you know, I've told, you know, you can just tell he's told them loads and they still don't get it. And it's about which players can he trust.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we can all agree that nothing really changes till the Glazers and Woodward go, or it change, right? I think we can all have that same point of view. But in the meantime, what's going to happen? I know that if the ground was full, do you think the Glazers and Woodward would be getting away with it right now?
No. Well, I don't know.
Definitely not.
The one thing, like we spoke about last time we spoke, was that they were quite happy to show how much they'd earned from the club. And see, this is another thing that angered me up on Wednesday, was the weather. It was pissing down with rain. You did not see Arteta move from that square shouting at his team in the pissing rain. Ollie was sat in the stands looking at his fucking video board again, occasionally got up. And it's just what's the difference there? It's someone that actually believes what he's doing.
No, I don't buy into that pontificating on the touchline type of manager. I don't like it. I think you know, your work is done in the week. You don't need to. Fergie never hardly ever got up there, because when Fergie made a point that whenever he went to the touchline, it meant something to sort yourselves out. Right. I don't read into the too much about whether he's danced along the touchline. I just don't.
Well, I know Pep Guardiola is a keen fan of being there and shouting that, and you see actually commitment coming from him, is that he knows that, being there, that they respect what he's talking about.
Sure, but you shouldn't need it. This is the point. This is the mentality problem we've talked about for years with those players. You shouldn't need that. You know, what's the problem with those players is their character to play consistently well at the highest level, because they can do it. They can do it. But they're either 8 out of 10 or they're 2 out of 10.
Too often, times have changed from when Fergie didn't get up there and that. You know, they all believe that. But the thing is, you look at Klopp, Pep, they're all there shouting at their team, giving them positive thought and whatever, not sat looking at a fucking video board.
You shouldn't need it. I don't believe you need it. The manager shouting at them like they're school kids to be hungry and playing for the dirt on the pitch.
You do need it.
Where did it go wrong? Apart from the simple fact that they scored one more goal than us, where did this whole thing go wrong for us at the weekend? I mean, I was sat there and straight after the game, I was inclined to praise Arsenal and go, yeah, fair play.
Yeah.
That you did all right. But in truth, they didn't even need to get out of first gear. They were crap, Arsenal. They were boring. They defended. They sat and parked the bus.
Oh, but they should have been 2-0 up in the first half. They were good enough to be 2-0 up in the first half. Yeah. They created enough chances to do that. I mean, the midfield was the problem, right? We've got 6 midfielders, but we haven't got one midfielder who's the midfielder we need, who can control the tempo of a match and who can take the ball and pass the ball, right? Fred is great at intercepting, harrying and closing people down. Great.
Then losing the ball.
Terrible playing it forward consistently. 1-2 touch, needs 3 and 4. McTominay, physicality in defensive, blocking shots similarly, can't take the ball off the back four. Pogba, liability, ego too big for his talent, loses the ball, gets caught in a trap all the time. They know how to play. Right? Matic, not mobile enough to cover that role on his own. We are desperately crying out for a cog in the middle of the pitch
who Thomas can control Partey. The game. Thomas Partey, boys.
What a player.
Ndidi at Leicester is another good option when he gets fit again. I think someone who can play that, because I think if you can get someone who can play that role on their own, it can free up the others in a three in midfield. Because he hasn't got that person who can take the ball off Maguire and Lindelof and control the tempo of the game in the way that Carrick would do and get everybody else playing accordingly, then that's like a really massive sticking point into the fluidity of the football that's going on. It's all just so sticky and slow. And then without a target man and number 9, you can't play it long.
Did you all see Keno's reaction?
Yeah.
I mean, he does say a few soupy things, but he also says some very... He was dead right when he said, there's no leader. There's no leader there. There's no one grabbing up the ball and going, right, let's give it them. Come on, let's get stuck in. You know, he said it's a disgrace to pull on that shirt if you're not like that.
Oh, of course. But, you know, those players have shown... Oh, and I'm talking, under Mourinho's time as well, most of those players have been there and have shown their inconsistency. and their lack of mentality over a period of time. I think with Maguire, and everyone's criticising him a lot, is that, well, you know what? There was no leader. And as soon as he signed, it was like, well, he looks like a natural type who could be centre-half. He actually is something we missed. He's good in the air in both boxes. He's good on the ball in terms of passing it and creating passing angles, which is important because we didn't have anyone on the back because they had shovel feet in the likes of Chris Smalling who could do that. So, you know, Maguire was a good signing. Overall, our record defensively was good. That's the stats. Now, has that been added to in other parts of the pitch? Have those players taken on that responsibility? No. Is that a fault of management? Probably yes. So I think we're all confused at the moment, as much as Ollie's confused about what his best team is, because he doesn't know that.
Well, no.
Go on, Drew.
Sorry, I was just going to say, going back to Partey again, I mean, it just shows, you know, that Arsenal were moaning, I think, last season before the Arteta coming in stuff, you know, before he came in, that they weren't spending, da-da-da-da. They picked this guy that they wanted, right?
Mm.
They had to pay through the nose for him and finish off his contract, but they went for him and got him. And he looks like he's going to be a quality footballer for them. He really does. If you saw any of the highlights again of that game, he absolutely bossed it.
He bossed it. And they were clear with their target and they went to go and get
him. That was his first game, Chris.
But we don't do that. We don't go for people like that.
We were going for Sancho, and then, you know, all that fanning around. Why didn't they pay for him? Get him in.
We didn't need Sanchez. We didn't need Sanchez at the time. We didn't need him.
No, Sancho.
Sancho. Sorry. I agree with you on Sancho. Clearly, Sancho was someone that Ollie desperately wanted. That's what all the paper talk was about. That right side hasn't been dealt with for a long time. Also, you know, it puts less pressure on Wan-Bissaka having to attack because Sancho can stay up there and therefore Sancho doesn't have to trace back as much because you can trust Wan-Bissaka on a one-on-one. So it made loads of sense. He's young, he's English, he's 20. He could be playing there for 10 years.
Yeah.
And for some reason, they don't trust to spend the money on that signing. So... And that would have made a world of difference. I think we've missed Martial at home in the last few games in the league, for sure, in terms of what he gives you up front.
He can go missing as well, though, can't he?
You can go missing. I think we've missed him as a goal threat. You know, I think in the last couple of games, it would have been different.
Yeah.
But I thought Greenwood played pretty decent on Sunday for his first full game back. It's midfield, the problem. Unless you can control midfield, you're not going to win football matches.
Let's take a pause, chaps. This is the Manchester United Redcast. We're back in a moment.
If you want an e-bike that doesn't look like it's made for the shopping precinct, something that's less Mr. Bean and more Steve McQueen, check out the range of bikes from London-based Cooler King. From dope 250-watt city bikes to Harley Bobber-inspired 750-watt beasts that can tear your face off while leaving your smile intact. Cooler Kings are made in limited numbers, yet highly affordable. Check them out now on the web at cooler.bike or find them on Instagram with hashtag CoolerKingBike. Cooler.bike. E-bikes that are cool AF.
Okay, we are back. It's the Manchester United Redcast. Me, Aaron Paul, Andrew Mann-Paul, and Chris Curley back in the hot seat once again, chatting all things Manchester United. I don't really want to dwell on Arsenal too much. I just think we were shit going forward. We were poor. We looked... I mean, Ollie's saying we did look at the races. Yeah, I agree. But there was nothing done to change, you know, the situation and the outcome. Granted, we had a couple of good chances. But even then, we just looked kind of poor. Chaps, Istanbul, Başakşehir away. I'm banking on a United win in this one. I think we're going to get, you know, we're going to make it 9 out of 9 in our first three Champions League games. What about you,
Chris?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've got 6 points already. 10 will qualify. It would be great if we could get up to 9 and an away win, because it takes the pressure off those other games a little bit. Mm. And they are the harder ones, with Paris and Leipzig. You don't want to be going into those last two games, despite beating both, needing a couple of points. So let's get it done. I think there's just, you know, I'm hoping that the game in midweek can create, give them some confidence, actually, because I think their confidence would have hit the floor a little bit. After Sunday's game, and you know, we can play well. I think playing well is very important. Scrapping a 1-0 victory won't be very good. They need to play well, and I'd be interesting. I think his team selection's fascinating, of how he's going to set himself up, because I think it'll be the way he'll play on Saturday. I do think at Goodison, if he gets a bad result at Goodison, he's going to be in proper trouble. Yeah. With Pochettino hovering.
We're swinging, though, man. Because every week it's like, yeah, great, Ollie's great. I mean, I heard someone on the radio the other day talking about how exciting it is to watch United and how they're kicking into gear. That was after the Leipzig game.
Later,
bang, it's like, oh, United are shit again. Well, make your mind up. What are we?
No, Listen, I like what Ollie does overall. I do. I'm not talking about this, what would I do? I'm saying what I think will happen. And what I think will happen, the way the narrative's building, where history has dictated so far how the board have dealt with managers over the last 7 years, is that if Ollie loses 3-0 to Everton badly on Saturday, he's going to be in massive trouble when we're in 15th, 16th with literally Fulham, West Brom, Brighton below us, right? After 7 or 8 games, 10 points off Champions League spots, Poch is hovering. It is a great excuse to sack Ollie just before the international break. That's what I think could happen. And I think the results in Europe, with Paris one particularly again, and Leipzig at home, have given Ollie that breathing space. But I think at the beginning of October, I doubted he'd made the month through the way things were shaping up.
Yeah, same.
And those two results are saving him. I think without those two results, I think it'd be quite obvious they'd be getting rid of him, because I think they've been looking for an opportunity to get rid of him for a while, because that is how Woodward and the Glazers operate.
I still think that they've got a yes man there.
Do you think he's a yes man, though?
Yes, I do.
Really? Why? What makes you say he's a yes man?
Because I can tell he's just a dead nice bloke, isn't he? He's not. I reckon he's not a fucker in the dressing room. I reckon he's not. He's not someone that scares the living daylights out of you. That goes.
Is Mourinho a yes man? Was Van Gaal a yes man?
No. What the fuck?
They couldn't get a tune out of those players either.
True. It's a good point.
It's the players. But, it's the players. The mentality. The mentality isn't strong.
Well, that's not going to change if you sack him and bring in the Poch, is it?
No, it's not. But he started to wheedle out those players, the mentality. I think he would have got rid of Pogba in the summer. I think you've got to get rid of Pogba as soon as you can.
Yeah, but it's not the manager, Chris, that gets rid of Pogba, is it? It's them knobheads.
Well, of course not. Who's going to buy him now in a global pandemic? Nobody's got any money to get your money back. What do you do? Well, clearly, Pogba's ruining the balance of that team. And you haven't got any form from him for the last 4 years. Four, five seasons he's been there now, he has proved to me he is a world-class player who deserves to be in the team every week, because he's consistently a 7 or 8 out of 10 and wins you games. I think nothing for the past 2 years has he been a liability.
Let's move on and talk about something else, because this is quickly turning into another rant, isn't it? Another rant cast, and we've got about 9 minutes left on our call, so I want to make the most of it. Nobby Styles, sad news of his passing last week. Drew, you were probably there when he made his debut, mate.
I was there when he ran it in a post and knocked his teeth out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'll tell you a funny story about my mum, late mum, who passed away a good few years back, actually used to live 4 doors down from Nobby Styles, his family, in Collierst, Manchester. And she always used to go on about Nobby and his brothers when I was a kid. But I just thought that it was very sad. He was a character, wasn't he? He was, apart from he's obviously been a great, I don't know how great a footballer he was, but I did see him. I think I saw him definitely 68 European Cup when he played and stuff, you know.
I mean, Robbie's in football history as only one of three Englishmen to have won the World Cup and the European Cup.
Yeah.
And he was an integral part to both the success of those games. And the he played every minute of the World Cup, obviously. And he man-marked Eusebio in the final, which, you know, Eusebio was arguably up there with Pelé at the time, the equivalent of Messi versus Ronaldo at the time. And, you know, he's part of our history. It's only such a shame that we can't give him the send-off he deserves. My mum actually taught at St. Patrick's in Colliehurst. In the late 80s, Nobby and Brian Kidd would go to the school and look for the kids and train them up. And the kids. I reminded her this week, my mum, that she never brought me along. And why didn't you? Why didn't you bring me along to that? That would have been great. I remember saying at the time, can I not go? That would have been good. So that's reminded me of that. But I think what's also sad about Nobby is dementia in football. And obviously with Sir Bobby this week as well, announcing he is suffering from dementia. It's an incredibly sad state of affairs if anybody getting that horrible disease. Yeah. But when football could heading those leather footballs for decades, and the authorities haven't investigated or done anything about it enough to protect, not only just to protect these guys now, but also to work out the new generation what to do and the impact of heading. It's an absolute scandal that they've not done more. And I hope, you know, if Bobby Charlton, who is the greatest English footballer that probably's ever been, if you go around the world, talk to English football, people will say, a Russian taxi driver in Los Angeles said to me, oh, Bobby Charlton. And he's known the world over. What else is it going to take for the football authorities to do something about the issue of dementia in that generation of footballers if your greatest one is suffering from it?
Sad, obviously, moving on to the news about Sir Bobby Charlton as well, a proper United legend. You always get, you know, I think for me, I always sit and I'm always sort of scared of the day that, you know, we lose him and we lose Sir Alex Ferguson. I mean, you guys, again, will remember the day Sir Matt Busby died and, you know, you see all those scenes. And obviously now it will be blown up even more. Obviously, we've got a taste of it when Sir Alex Ferguson got ill, but I mean, shit, it's quite scary. Like, and I feel very, very sad about Bobby Charlton. You know, his younger brother Tommy coming out yesterday saying that he was in tears. You know, throughout some of the conversations, he's struggling to remember things. It's just, it's really, really sad. It's quite scary as well. It's quite scary. You know,
you're right, Aaron. I think it's also sad, especially everything that's going on right now. We've all got a greater sense of nostalgia for everything of our youth and the things we remember as kids growing up and who we can and can't see at the moment. And all, you know, it's just the worst perfect time for all these things to happen and makes us, you know, evaluate what we feel about things that we enjoyed a lot, because it's hard to find stuff you enjoy at the moment. Mm. It's one of the reasons we're probably more heightened in our frustration of what's going on at United, because, you know, our memories are very recent of what worked and why it was good and what investment over that 30-year period we put into getting that good, and then to see it gone is so upsetting. And then combined everything else that's going on in the world, it makes it tough. But it doesn't change anything that those guys have done for us. And, you know, I'll always have a smile on my face as to what they did for Manchester United and what they gave us as fans first, rather than a tear in my eye about what's happening to them now.
Well said, Paul. Well said. Looking ahead to the game on Wednesday, Istanbul Başakşehir, the opponent. It's a 5:55 kickoff in the Champions League, chaps. How do you see this one going?
Well, 2-1 win. Briefly said, I think it needs to be a confidence builder.
Yeah,
you know, it ends into for the team and the lads going into the Premier League, because the Premier League on Saturday is a much more important game at the moment for everything. We need to get up that table in the Premier League. I think we should have the ability to win that comfortably. Be interesting if he does give Cavani a run out from the start and seeing how far his fitness can take him in the game. Martial will come back and play because he needs a game. Will Tuanzebe comes back. He puts Mbappe and Neymar in his pocket, but hasn't played since. I thought he would have played again before now. So I'd expect Tuanzebe to get a run out. But I don't think the team is going to change too much from...
I think he's got to play Van der Beek. He's got to play Van der Beek. He's got to.
I think it'll be similar to the Leipzig team.
Give him 90, you know, give him a run out. Give him a full game.
Yeah, I think Van der Beek has to play. I'd like to see Van der Beek play on the where McTominay played on Sunday in that right side of midfield. I'd like to see him play there. Let's, you know, it's a game where you can find out if I would not play Pogba, but I would put Bruno in the top of the diamond and Van der Beek on the right and see if they can play there together. It's a game where you can find out, I think.
Well,
yeah, I agree. I agree. Chaps, how's it going to go? United away to bash action in the Champions League. Let's have some predos, gents.
My predo is just a very scrappy 1-0, sadly. As much as I'd love a 3-0 comprehensive win.
I think 2-1 to us.
I think we're going to win 3-0, you know.
Well, you said 7-0 last time
I think we'll do well. I think we'll do well. I think we'll have a reaction and that will frustrate us because obviously we've got Everton at the weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, I've deliberately sort of not looked ahead to that, but, you know, we've got Everton Saturday, 12:30, and that could go one way or another. They're either brilliant or they're poor. I mean, they've lost their last two games.
They've definitely been more brilliant than poor, Aaron.
Yeah, they've lost their last two games, though. They've lost their last two. So, you know.
Without Carlison playing and without James playing on Sunday, they're a massive loss to their attacking threat, I think. Yeah. And if they're back,
we're in trouble.
That's a tough one for us. Because Goodison, we're not great at Goodison, historically.
No, it's not a good recently.
And I think that and it's also 12:30 kickoff, long trip from Turkey, all that nonsense kicks in. Yeah. You know, early morning kickoffs at Goodison, I remember, have not been good. I think only in 2007 can I remember we won 4-2.
That was a good one. We were
2-0 down and in trouble, and that was going for the title with Chelsea. So I think I actually think Saturday's game will really define how this season really progresses.
Yeah,
gents, I've got to wrap it up because we've got less than a minute left on our call. Thank you very much, though. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate you joining us. I'm just really wary of the call cutting out. But yeah, unfortunately, these pods are all recorded on Zoom, if anyone could tell. We should really go to Skype, shouldn't we? We should really do Skype so we just got a bit more time. But yeah, we have barely got any time left. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, guys. Thanks nice to chat as always. Let's hope it's happy
Chris. Cheers, chaps. Until next week, though, come on, you Reds.
Go on, you Reds.
Wasn't that a great podcast? Now, if you've got 90 seconds spare in your day, come and listen to ours. It's called What Has He Said Now? And is available wherever you got this podcast.
You're going to lose a number of people to the flu.
This is a Playback Media production. Get all the associated links for this podcast at unitedredcast.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.